to that question, then, there's also a central component. The central component is the brain. And the brain, again, is deciding, okay, well, how long can we sustain whatever effort that is? And I think that's the beauty of ultra running, right? Is like in some of my best performances, I never had that top end capacity, but I always had the ability to just sustain it. And that's what's so wonderful about this sport is if you have that central capacity to just kind of manage things, the brain allows us to continue at a pretty high level for a really long time. And I think that's why we all do ultra running.
Thanks for joining us at the Trailhead. This is Trail Runner Nation, where we go on virtual runs with experts that help teach us how to be better runners and possibly better humans. Grab an energy drink and let's get going.
Today, we're going to have our minds blown by Dr. Joe Youhan. In this episode, we're going to talk about the central governor and how it affects every run that we're on.
This topic is so integral to our lives as runners that we had to do two episodes. This is part one of those two episodes, so you'll need to pick up and stay tuned for next week. Don, Santa Claus came to my porch yesterday and dropped off a Path Projects package, and inside was the new Killam PX pant. Boy, am I excited.
Merry Christmas to you, Scott. The Killam PX pant is a great all-around running pant, but doubles as an all-around do-everything-else pant.
It has those cool tapered legs with the little zipper down at the bottom. I love that. And if you like the pockets from the shorts, you're going to love the pockets on the Killam PX pant because they're the same. They still have that back pocket for your phone. They have two nice hand pockets in the front. They have five pockets in these pants, Freeman.
It's not just the pocket, Scott. It's the magic Tory fabric that makes it so durable and all-around stretchy-type material. It's not the spandex. It's something completely different that makes it comfortable, strong, lighter, and quick-drying.
And it doesn't absorb water, so you can take it out on those rainy or snowy days and not get weighed down.
So go to pathprojects.com and check them out for yourself and see what Scott's talking about.
We wouldn't be doing this podcast half as well if we didn't have our partners, and you can. The Next Level Nutrition is one of them.
Well, there's a chance we could bonk on this podcast without our You Can. And have you tried the new strawberry banana flavored Edge Energy?
Yes, Don. I just got some in the mail, and last weekend I went out with a strawberry banana, and wow, I loved the taste of that. The orange is good. Strawberry banana is my new favorite.
Well, there's a lot of good reasons that it works well, and there's a lot of science behind it. It's proprietary low glycemic complex carbohydrate. What that means to me is it tastes great and it lasts smoothly a long time.
It's long lasting and it keeps you out there performing at your best.
And UCAN makes more than just Edge Energy. They make energy powder, energy bars, energy plus protein, and healthy snacks.
They also have hydration mixes that have zero sugar, zero calories, but with all the electrolytes.
You can also sign up for their MVP subscription package and save money.
Here's what you need to do. Go to youcan.co/TRN and enter the code TRN20 at checkout. You'll get 20% off.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Don Freeman.
And I'm Scott War. And today we're going to talk about a topic that Don and I often enjoy talking about, and that is the central governor. And we thought, who better to come on and talk about the central governor than Dr. Joe Youhan? He's been on the podcast before. He's a doctor of physical therapy, board certified orthopedic specialist. He's a coach, founder and owner of Youhan Performance in Eugene, Oregon, where he does physical therapy, coaching, running analysis, and probably a whole lot more. He's currently studying in Steamboat Springs, Colorado at Johnson & Johnson Physical Therapy and you're going to have to explain this to me, Joe, because I don't know what this means. There's a lot of big words. You're studying to be a fellow in training for manual therapy. Can you explain what that is so that I'm not like thinking about it the whole podcast?
You can think of it as magic camp.
Nice.
Manual therapy are hands-on techniques that we can use to push, pull, enact some positive change in the body, which is a big part of what I think holistic physical therapy treatment should be. And so there's a lot of different techniques to learn out there. I've learned a few, and my experience here is just trying to make my hands and my brain as sharp as possible.
How is that different from your physical therapy practice and what you do as a physical therapist?
I don't think that it is. I think that it's just a component. I mean, a physical therapist can do a lot. I think we're stereotypically known for prescribing exercises, strength and range of motion. But in the way chiropractors or osteopaths do, we can use our hands to enact a change. And what I like to tell people is that I am easily frustrated and bored. And so if I'm not getting someone better with an exercise, with a stretch, with a strengthening, I want to get my hands on them and see if I can make that change quicker. And so some of these manual techniques really are kind of magical in some respects in terms of how quickly they can change something. And so that's why I'm here. I use manual therapy quite a bit in my practice. And this is, you know, the highest level of training to learn more of those techniques.
And you can find out more about all of the services that Joe offers at Yuhan Performance. We'll leave a link in the show notes. But you're based out of Eugene, Oregon, but you're studying for about a year and a half in Steamboat Springs. You're going back to Eugene periodically to help your athletes so you can get your hands on, but you also do some virtual training as well.
Correct. I am still doing full-time coaching for mostly ultra, but also sub-ultra running clients. Also do running stride coaching and analysis online, which has been something that I've done almost out of necessity to help people optimize their stride and avoid injury for the last probably 8 years.
Let's remind people that through all of these credentials, which are exciting to talk about and brag about our guests, he's also in a very accomplished trail runner. And he's raced and he's put bibs on and he's set amazing performances out there. So we want to recognize that too. Much of this that he's speaking about comes from the experiment of one where he watches and learns in a classroom, in a clinic, and also on the trail. So we want to recognize Joe's accomplishments as a runner too. So
great. Well, Don, let's get into some definitions. We have some big words that we're going to be talking about today, and we need to all be on the same page with some of these.
Central governor. We've heard that term thrown around, and we've used it, and sometimes incorrectly. We're not sure, but we know that there's something called the central governor. We've talked to Phil Maffetone about it and Dr. Cucuzzella. How can we become better by understanding how our body works? Some of the things like cramping or nausea or negative head chatter, the things that happen to us out there, there's reasons for it. And Joe's going to help us understand why.
What is the central governor, Joe?
And do we all have one?
We absolutely do, or I don't think we would be alive. To adequately define what central governor is, I think we go back to the eternal question and why a lot of us are even here and listening to this podcast. And that is, what is the key to peak performance? And what are the barriers to performance and the barriers to improvement? And so the initial theories about that limitations were completely biological, meaning what is now referred to as the catastrophe model says the reason we slow down, the reason we stop, the reason we collapse at the end of a race is because at a cellular level or at an organ level, our body is just tapped out. And so that was the prevailing model in exercise physiology in the 1960s till probably maybe even the 80s or 90s. But the interesting thing is when they began to study those things at the cellular and at the muscle and nervous system level, they weren't finding evidence to support that. Oh. And so you would think that if the catastrophe model were true and that we run out of good things or we accumulate bad things and then it quits, you would see the body ramp up and up and up and up and then give out, or you would see, you know, just a total failure of the system. And it just, that data never surfaced. And in fact, we started to see conflicting data that suggested, for example, when we exercise, our nervous system over time actually downregulates. You would think we're trying to run as fast as we can in a marathon or an ultra, that our brain would do more and more and more because we know cognitively it's harder and harder and harder. So why isn't our nervous system actually firing more? And EMG studies of these nerves showed the opposite.
EMG study, define that. What is that?
Electromyography. So it's a measure of how much the nerve will fire the muscle.
Okay.
And so they do these studies and you'd think we're at the end of like a hard road marathon, just ran Boston on Monday, and you're pushing harder and harder to maintain that pace, you would think that the electrode measuring that muscle, that that signal would be higher and higher and higher. And in reality, all of the studies have shown the opposite.
Why do you think that is, Joe? Why do you think we thought this in the 60s and all the way through the 90s, and then there was a flip in the paradigm? What's the theory behind that, or the logic behind that switch?
Well, and I think that's where the central governor model was formed, that because we're seeing data that actually says the body is conserving, that the brain is actually down-regulating how much that we are firing the muscle, suggests that there is some central process in the brain that's saying, you know, Joe's running a little bit too fast, he's running a little bit too hard, he's not stopping, so we don't know if he's going to try to kill us or not. So we should probably do a couple things peripherally or centrally to try to get him to slow down for the purpose of preserving the brain or preserving the body. And that, in essence, is what the central governor is this central brain process that tries to determine, okay, here's this task at hand. It could be a 400-pound squat, one rep max, or it could be a 100-miler Western States. How much output can the body give without destruction, without catastrophe? And so the brain decides that, and the brain is really what selects our pacing and selects our output. And that was really antithetical to that catastrophe model, because it actually said, no, actually the brain is in charge. It's not necessarily the cells and what they're doing, but the brain is what's deciding how fast and how far we run.
So what part of this theory or this process is the distance of the race? What if it was a 5K versus 100 mile? Where does that come into the equation? How does the brain use that piece of information to either downregulate or continue with the current pace that we're on?
Well, I think that effort is that product of intensity times time. And so there's a central governor component. Like I said, with a max effort squat, that is a 3-second activity, but it's extremely high intensity. Mm-hmm. As is running a 400 meters or a mile or a 5K relative to 100, but it's high intensity. And so the same calculations are made based on, okay, can the body and its systems withstand either that high intensity or the long duration? And then it does these sort of internal calculations, largely based on both, I think, components of biology. I think the brain kind of knows what it can do and can't do from a physiological standpoint, but experience weighs into this too. And that's the beauty of training. Mm. Because with training, we can alter what our brain's perception of our capacity and our potential is.
When I hear the word central governor, I remember the study that was done in a lab where they took, I don't know if it was Marines or whatever, and they put them on a treadmill and they said, over the next 5 minutes, I want you to run to exhaustion. And as soon as they're done, they're just going, oh man, that was hard. Oh, I'm so tired. And they said, can you run any further? No, I can't. And they said, we want you to run for one more minute as hard as you can. And they get back on the treadmill and they go another minute. So their central governor, at least the way I understood it, says, I'm going to run to exhaustion and here's that finite threshold, bam. But then they're introduced the option or the mandate or whatever to say, now we want you to go for another minute. And for some reason, the brain is tricked or the central governor is tricked and elastically moves another minute and they're able to do that. Is that accurate, Joe? Is that what you're talking about?
And Joe, before you answer that and then give you time to kind of think through it, let me just share this with you. Scott's questions, recalling a study, here's what's probably true. Yes, there was a study. People worked hard, but we don't know whether they were Marines. We don't know whether they were on a treadmill or a bike. We don't know how long they went, but we knew they tried hard and then were asked to do it again hard. So that's probably true. So
prove me wrong. Prove me wrong, Freeman.
I can't.
Do you remember the study?
No,
I think I'm 100% accurate on that.
I know your history. I know your history, my friend. So Joe, take those facts, scramble them up, and see what you can do with it.
Well, why don't I come to the rescue and I'll cite a study that I was looking at that looked at a cycling time trial where athletes were asked to pedal for an hour And then they had to do 6 1-minute sprints. And what was shown in both speed, power, and that EMG, the nerve muscle measurement, is that even though with the building fatigue and the draining on the physiology, on the muscle and on the body, the output in that last minute sprint was as high as the first and significantly higher than the fourth and the fifth. And so we see that consistently, and we see it at every race. We see that at every high school race. Like, how can this kid who looked like they were at death's door with a kilometer to go in the 5K, how can they sprint at twice that speed in the last quarter? And that's the brain doing calculations, because the brain, the central governor, is in charge of keeping us alive. And it's sort of like it's got these, you know, coins or poker chips to spend, and it needs to hold on to enough of them so that it's got something at the end.
Oh, that's a good visual.
At a deep physiological level, that means like staying alive and not, you know, blowing out a muscle or cardiac arrest or, you know, heat stroke. And so what it'll do is it'll withhold until the end is near. And so for that Marine study, it could very well be, okay, you've gone as hard as you can for 5 minutes. Now you're getting rest. So the brain's like, okay, I'm cool. I'm getting reserves back. Now you're asked to go a very small amount of time, and it's doing the math in the pocketbook and saying, okay, well, I've got a coin for that. So I'll spend that knowing I've got a little bit of extra.
Wow.
And that, I think that's one of the biggest arguments for the central governor, is that just seemingly inconsistency in effort that we see across the board in any race from a mile to 100 mile.
That's so good. And Scott, my hat off to you. You really nailed that. And I shouldn't have jumped in there. How many, we've talked about effort, you know, we're holding back, we're applying more effort. Central governor is managing that for us and thinking. And we often try to do math on the trail when we get deep into the miles and we realize we can't even do simple addition. But the central governor is really doing some high-end mathematics here and seems to be able to continue doing this despite our fatigue. How many things is the central governor managing besides effort? Is it working on some of our own physiology, our own chemistry, things happening within our body that's important to regulate as well?
I think the amount that the brain is regulating is as limitless as the number of neurons and nerves in our system.
Ooh.
Meaning it's monitoring things in our lower legs, in our arms, in our heart, in our digestive system, in the hormonal system. And it's all feeding in some degree of information. And then so it's the brain's like job to interpret that. Okay, well, I'm getting this negative thing from Joe's stomach right now, but his legs are feeling really good. And he's on a beautiful trail in a really good mood. So we're going to make him feel, you know, only mildly fatigued versus if there's more negative information coming into the system.
Wow.
And I think that then is the challenge is, okay, knowing all of the different things that the brain is monitoring, how much can we do as runners to keep the brain happy and to give it positive information, whether that's in pacing, in hydration, fuel, even our running mechanics can play a role in that.
Joe, I want to dive deep into that, because that is the question that I want answered, is how can I make my central governor elastic? How can I move it further down so that I can go further, go faster, go longer? But this is the question I have before we get there. Is there a baseline for that central governor in individuals? Like, are there some people that are wired from birth that have, you know, just the central governor that's way out there, that they can, without any training or without any experience, just go further, longer, faster than somebody like me that has a wimpy central governor?
Well, I think it comes down to there are peripheral components and there are central components. And in that, to define that, a peripheral component is our body as a whole and the different body systems. So muscular system, our skeletal system, our metabolic system, our kind of cardiovascular aerobic system, all these systems provide a degree of capacity. And so we all know that there are certain runners out there, the Jim Walmsleys and the Courtney Dewalters, who have physical capacities that are in the top 1% or 0.1% in the world. And so in that frame, we can't discount the biology of those physiological capacities to generate energy, to use oxygen, to propel their body. But to that question, then, there's also a central component. The central component is the brain. And the brain, again, is trying to weigh all of the inputs to it and deciding, okay, well, how long can we sustain whatever effort that is? And I think that's the beauty of ultra running, right? Is like, and I think I've been there too. In some of my best performances, I never had that top end capacity, but I always had the ability to just sustain it. I'd be like pretty fast, but I just didn't fall off. And that's what's so wonderful about this sport, is if you have that central capacity to just kind of manage things, stay positive in all of the, you know, different ways that you can, then the brain allows us to continue at a pretty high level for a really long time. And I think that's why we all do ultra running, is to kind of like overcome the stresses on our peripheral system and have our brain allow us to continue.
People say that running is just so boring, put one foot in front of the other. How do you do it? You must have to listen to something, you know, in your ears to even tolerate being out there that long. But there's so much going on. It's so fascinating. And I think you bring that right to the surface. There's so much going on if you just pay attention. And if you just learn from the information your body is giving you, and watching the relationship between the central and the peripheral, your brain and your body, and how they work together, and just sit back and watch these two do their dance, a beautiful ballet of performance that happens.
Hey, Scott, I think my brain is starting to hurt from all this discussion on the central governor with Dr. Yuhan. I think we need to talk about gear.
Let's talk about Jonji gear. They just released their third drop, which is their fall winter collection based on the American Southwest. They have great pieces focused on the transitioning into the cold weather.
Included in this release is the Thermal Zephyr running jacket for weightless insulated warmth. With these shorter days and colder weather, it's perfect. And if you need to take it off and stow it, it doesn't take up much room in the middle of your run.
And they do good for the planet, too. With every purchase, they donate 2% of sales to clean water. With the Fall/Winter Southwest collection, they're partnering with Dig Deep to provide and install running clean water in hundreds of households on the Navajo Nation.
And at Jonji, they make great gear for both women and men. Whether it's bottoms, tops, outerwear, or accessories, you can find it at jonji.com.
And this is what you do to get 15% off. Go to jonji.com and enter the code TRN15, and you get 15% off. Go take a look.
And now back to learn more about the central governor with Dr. Yuhan.
Hey, Joe, how close do we get to imminent tragedy before our central governor kicks in? I mean, does it start shutting things down and causing issues at like 70% of capacity or 60% capacity, or is it variable between person to person?
I think that's a great question, because, and we can actually measure that to a certain degree, looking at those electromyographic studies, that EMG, because we are able to measure and count the number of the neurons, but also the motor units. And so in an EMG study, you can actually calculate the percentage of a muscle fired. I'm not exactly sure what this percentage is, but I'm pretty sure that even at like absolute 100% mental effort, the most nerve and muscle activation is about 70%. And that should really tell you something in terms of, okay, well, you may feel like you're doing 100% and you are going to, you know, you're feeling like you're dying, but the brain is holding back a tremendous amount in reserve. And so for that reason, it's kind of good to know that, but it's also, that's where our capacity to improve is. it's not necessarily always, well, I'm going to make this muscle bigger through strength training or through running farther and faster. It's just training the brain to, you know, and instead of 60%, I'm going to get 65% of that muscle activation.
So the EMG is a great gauge to look at and to measure, but that doesn't tell us which system might need support. Can we learn or kind of decipher which system needs to be propped up or improved to change this?
That's a tough one. I feel like you're going to have those sorts of sensations during a race or during training. Mm. If you are having quad pain, or if you're having stomach issues, or you're having sort of hypoglycemia bonking, I think that's going to be your best data to say what that is. But it's really hard, because the other component is, if we talk about capacity, peripheral versus central, the peripheral system, those kind of race day things that we think about, are going to provide inputs. But the challenging thing is there are more subtle inputs related to the immune system, the hormonal system, the nervous system as a whole, that are going to provide inputs. And so in that regard, how well we're sleeping, how our like overall nutrition is, how our life stress is, are all going to play a role in that central governor output come race day. And I don't think every runner has experienced this, but I think a lot have, where you go into a race and you know that physically, like, you have done this wonderful training, you've had maybe great workouts, great long runs, but you've in the last month incurred a significant life stress, relationship issue, work issue, I'm not sleeping very well. And then you show up to the race and you blow up. And you're like, well, no, my pace was fine, my nutrition plan was fine. Why am I laying on the side of the trail puking or bonking? And that's the other part that the central governor is weighing. It knows. It knows if you haven't been getting good sleep for the last 3 months. It knows if you've been kind of ruminating over a relationship or a family stress or something, and that's weighing on your system. And so it's a big challenge. And I think that's why, as runners and as coaches, it may seem like it's, you know, cliche to say, well, we need to be well-rounded and we need to be holistic, but you really do. Because even though we are runners, we are humans, and we just, our capacity to do something really, really hard requires our entire body, inside and out, to just be at its best.
I'm picturing, as you're talking through this, Joe, this little man, this little Martian. I think there was a cartoon when I was growing up that had this, where there's a little man steering your brain and kind of in control and has his dashboard, and he's in there and he's saying, you know what, the sleep gauge is down. I see the hormonal stress gauge is up. And you know what, in order to preserve this machine that I'm driving, we're gonna shut you down right now. And my first idea is, I'm going to give him a little cramping. And so I'm going to hit the cramp button. And you know, the cramping isn't slowing him down. You know what? Let's give him a little stomach indigestion. So let's push that button. And now you start losing some of your food from breakfast. This guy's still going. So now, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do a little bonking. I'm going to put some bonk in there. And so he's controlling the buttons, and he's your friend, and you need to nurture that friendship. And that's my next question after Don here is, how can we become friends with this central governor in our training? How can we have a better relationship and maybe move that central governor a little bit further, so we're making compromises with him, saying, hey, don't start shutting me down and start throwing cramps or throwing stomach issues at me so soon.
I love that analogy. This little man you have up in your head, Scott. But maybe, I just want to throw this out there to Joe as he answers this. Maybe we don't want to change this central governor. Maybe it's perfect the way it is. Mm. And we just need to learn to listen and
ignore.
Well, I don't know about ignore it, but just appreciate what this central he or she is doing for us, and manipulating it is going to sabotage our health, our life, and ultimately maybe our performance. Maybe it's since it's calculating the distance and what we have, I don't know if we want to make it elastic. So I throw that out there.
Well, I think we can combine them.
Yeah.
and say that, you know, the purpose of training under this idea of brain training or central governor is twofold. We want to make changes to the peripheral system, and we want to make changes to the central system. And so the peripheral system is what you think about, what exercise physiology is about. It's how can we make positive adaptations to allow for greater performance? Can we make cells, muscles, and systems more robust and efficient? Can they, you know, create more energy, be more efficient in the use of that energy? Even things like, can we tolerate the acid, you know, the hydrogen ions that are part of the metabolic system? Can we, those are all peripheral things. Can the muscle become more robust in handling that stress? That's the peripheral thing that we know that we train. And the better we can make those peripheral systems, the relatively better news they're going to provide to the brain.
Love that. Yeah.
The other component is central. And I think that you can make that little man in your brain feel safer with higher levels of stress. And that's where that experience comes from. And so what I like to say, my purpose of training or my definition of training is convincing our brain that what we're doing is safe. And so inherently in everything that we do, we're trying to convince the brain that what we're doing is survivable and or sustainable. And so that really should be a guide for training and sort of career development, to have these experiences where either the body positively adapts or the brain adapts through relatively positive, whether that's truly positive and enjoyable or just merely survivable experiences, to say, okay, well, I did that last time and I didn't die. And actually, it was like kind of cool. So the next time I'm going to do it again, twofold, because now peripherally, my system is stronger and has more physical capacity, but my brain is also a little bit more comfortable. It's going to let me kind of toe that red line a little bit closer and a little bit longer.
I think people should rewind that last minute and a half. If you were not on board completely, I've never heard it explained better. We can move our peripheral system. We can train it. We can make it perform better. And then we need to have our peripheral nervous system demonstrate to our central nervous system that what we're doing is good, fun, safe. We survived it. Now, central governor, you have more information and experience to make decisions for me later. I just think that was just spot on.
Which is easier to train, the peripheral or the central?
Oh,
I think our experiences, our collective experiences at the ultra finish line tells us that it's actually the brain, because you see a lot of different body types. You see a lot of different ages. Scotty Mills, one of my favorite people ever, for his age, his body's doing great, but so much of his capacity is from his brain and what he's been able to do and what he continues to do in the sport is he just keeps that brain sharp. And so if the brain is on board and you can kind of do that delicate dance of balancing the body systems, you don't necessarily need to be better to do more or to keep going. And I think some of our elder statesmen and women in the sport are evidence of that, that because they have refined that brain, even with, you know, genetically waning physical capacity, they're still doing really great things.
We know that with the peripheral nervous system, if we don't keep it trained up, it falls off pretty quick. You know, our cardiovascular, we've all been in the place where I got to get myself back into shape. So it can fall off. But does the central nervous system, the central governor, need to be trained up again?
You know, I think that it needs priming. But I remember being in Ashland, this was 2013, and we are out socializing with Tim Olson and Hal Kerner, and Hal and I were talking about Western States, and Tim had just won in 12, and Hal and I are talking. He's like, you know, once you learn how to win Western States, you just know how. And that speaks to the power of the brain. Like, once you kind of learn something, it knows. And so that's a really powerful thing, that it can hold on to that lesson. It knows how to push. It knows where to push. It knows when to push. And I think the converse, the less fun version of that is the argument for lifetime bans with doping. Because with doping, you are creating this peripheral change, this artificially, you know, enhanced peripheral change to muscles, to systems that teaches your brain to reach this next level. And so one of the arguments, even though, okay, well, I'm done. I doped 2 years ago and now my ban is over. There's evidence based on this theory that says, no, you've kept that neurological, that mental capacity to push that you learned through the doping. Hmm. And so it is really powerful.
Interesting.
It's subject to a lot of kind of philosophical questions in that regard.
Now the central governor says, hey, we have done that before. We have leaped across that chasm and it's possible. And so now you believe you can. And so you go out there and you do it. And otherwise you never would have. Central governor has said, hey, you'll make it halfway. But now that you've doped, you have seen yourself leap all the way across. You go with the confidence that you can. Or does the body say, you're not doping anymore. Don't be a dope. You're not going to make it.
That's a good point.
Well, I think, the more common example is what a lot of us ultra runners do. When we're new to the sport, mentally, because we don't have that experience piece, we tend to overdo training. Mm. Oh my gosh, it's my first Western States. I need to do a 30, 40, 50 mile run. I need to run all these miles. I need to do all the vertical. I need to do everything. Mm. And there's this tendency to almost overdo it and show up to the starting line physically worn down. But what you'll see then on the tail end of someone's career is they'll actually kind of under train because they know they're like, well, I haven't really put in the work, but I'm just going to gut it out. And they do. And they may not have like a peak performance, but because they've had that experience, now they can actually kind of get away with under training because the brain knows how to push. It knows how to suffer for that long.
The thought came to me as you're explaining that, Joe. My nemesis, my kryptonite is speed training or interval training. I've always avoided it. I'm doing more of it now, but I'm thinking that may be a good reason to do interval training is these short intervals, you're training your brain to move your legs faster, even though they're tired after a warm up. You know, you run for 2 miles and then you do these little intervals. You're training your brain or training that central governor to say, I can go faster. My legs may be heavy. They may be tired. They're used to going the speed, but even like a 20-second burst with some repeats, does that help with the central governor in your training?
I think so. And it goes back to, I've got this sort of list of the three brain-based training goals.
Ooh.
Relating to what you're talking about with, okay, well, why would like hill sprints, for example, help a 100-miler? And it comes down to those, to that brain training. And goal number one of the brain is don't die. And so if we can do something very hard and like literally or figuratively not die and have a relatively positive experience. So it's like, okay, well, that hill sprint felt terrible, but a minute later I've caught my breath and it's okay. And now I'm feeling pretty good. That again is that positive experience to the brain. It's just a different dimension of confidence and toughness. And so then again, what that short interval does for the second component is expanding that peripheral capacity. So like you said, like, yeah, you're training your brain to push harder, but you're also training the peripheral nerve to fire the muscle at a higher intensity so it can go there at mile 80 of a 100-miler. And then that all adds up to that increased confidence that you get from doing those things. And so I think for a lot of reasons, doing short sprints, doing very non-ultra running, non-specific ultra training can have a really positive impact because of the brain component.
I never thought that those short sprints had anything to do with the brain. I thought they had stuff to do with more of this peripheral system. So I'm learning something, Joe. Thank you so much.
Well, here's another thing that in our training group in Eugene, to expanding on this, we have a saying that goes, anything that sucks is good 100-mile training.
That's true, right?
To a point, as long as you are resting from that stress, it is. It's like anything that's really hard mentally can be a positive training experience for something like an ultramarathon.
And maybe training at the end of your day. And not the beginning of every day. Maybe training at noon when it's the hottest part of the day. Because I've shown up to races, as we all have, And then I'm running at noon and I think, you know what? This really sucks. I've been running from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. and it's been perfect weather and I'm not really trained up for this. It's good to go do things that are different, that you've stood on your feet for 10 hours and now you're going to go run for an hour. It sucks, but it's good.
And as long as those things are balanced, again, if they're balanced,
sure.
I think that's where some of the challenges come in with ultra endurance training is not necessarily recognizing what life stressors are and then the amount of rest that we need from them.
Yeah, and that's why people should listen to you, Joe, and not for me, because I would destroy someone before they even got their bib on. You would make them stronger so they could put a bib on.
We hope you could wrap your brain around this episode because this is the introductory course. Next week, we'll dive deeper into the relationship between the central governor and pain.
We talked about what the central governor is. Now we're going to dive deep into the masterclass on how we can work with our central governor. Can we trick it? Can we train it?
Dr. Yuhan is going to help us explore that in a conversation.
Between now and then, you can find out more about Joe and his company at yuhanperformance.com.
This podcast would not be possible without great support from our partners, and you can find them on our deals page. If you like what you hear, show them that you enjoy it by purchasing something from them. We'd appreciate it.
We also want to thank our Patreon supporters. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon supporter, you can go to patreon.com and click on Trail Runner Nation.
And special thanks to our business Patreon supporter, Doug Crumley. He's a private wealth advisor with Crumley and Associates.
It's a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC. When you have the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Visit them at www.dougcrumleyjr.com. Let me spell that for you, Freeman. That's DougCrumleyJr.com.
And this show is produced by Doug Mayer and his dog, Izzy.
Our associate producer and editor is Ryan Warr.
And our social media expert, Yana Gibalova.